This is the Education Exchange with Paul Peterson. I am the senior editor at Education Next. Thank you for joining us. In the United States, most governments are led by a single person. You know who's in charge. In all 50 states, governors lead the executive branch. Whether you hate or love California Governor Newsom or Florida Governor DeSantis, you at least know who's in charge. But most of the nation's 14,000 school districts are run by school boards or committees that can range in size from as little as 3 or 5 members or as many as 23 or many more. Why are schools governed by boards when most other agencies give the job to a single individual? Is this good for education? Or would it be better to do like New York City, the largest school system in the country? In the Big Apple, the mayor appoints the board. The mayor is responsible for what happens. But the New York City legislature is currently reconsidering that. Maybe it should abandon mayoral control for this city of New York. To help it decide, they commissioned a report, and the report has just come in. Well, it's nearly 300 pages long, and it's entitled Mayoral Control of New York City Schools. So to discuss this report, I have with me on the Education Exchange, Vlad Kogan, a political scientist, a professor at Ohio State University, who is one of the country's leading experts on school boards, school elections, and school government. So thank you, Vlad, for joining me on the Education Exchange.
Well, thanks for having me, and thank you for that very generous introduction.
Well, Vlad, this report is massive. It's nearly 300 pages long, as I said. Is the content as impressive as the length? Does it tell us whether the school board should be appointed or elected?
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. So when I was a kid, I used to take karate classes, and we had this one karate instructor that would ask us when we had haircuts. He would say, "Do you have a haircut?" And we would say, "Yes." And he would say, "Get your money back." And that's the reaction I had after reading this report. It's a long report, but I feel like there's so little of value in it, and that there's almost a complete disconnect between the evidence it summarizes and the recommendations that it puts forward. And I'm happy to kind of dive into those details.
Well, so what are the key recommendations? I think we should start with that. What do they say should be done?
Yeah, well, I think that they don't say much. They say recommendation one is, quote, empower students, parents, and teacher expertise in the New York City school system. Of course, who could disagree with that? Recommendation two is create more avenues for meaningful deliberation and shared decision making. But there's really nothing in the report that tells you about how to get that. So the report has three parts. One is the recommendations, which we started talking about. Second, it has a really long literature review of like what we know about school board governance. And I think the bottom line from that report, from the literature review, is literally we don't know anything. There's no consensus. There's no clear evidence one way or the other. And if there's no evidence or consensus, it's not obvious like what's actionable. And then the last part of the report is an analysis of public comment. So they had some hearings that they held, and they had some written comments. So this is a school district with 8 million residents, and they had exactly 675 comments. And there's no reason to think that these 675 people are at all representative, that they're not, that they weren't put forward by various interest groups. And shockingly, they spent $250,000 hiring a consultant to go through these 675 comments. When in fact, again, if we want to know is how the public in New York feels, what they should have done was done a public opinion survey. And for that $250,000, I'm sure they could have got a massive sample size and really gotten real insights about how people feel about governance. But I think from this report, we get very little, I think, actionable information.
Well, I think you've skewered this report, and I can't say that I disagree. That's a pretty good synopsis there. But now, who wrote it? Where was this thing produced?
So my understanding, and you probably know better, so correct me if I'm wrong, but there was some legislation written passed a few years ago that was a compromise that extended mayoral control for a few years. But one of the conditions was that there would be this analysis.
And yeah, so two I think, years. They gave them two more years under mayoral control, but they had to have a study done to see whether or not this was a good idea.
Exactly. Yeah. And so my understanding is it's the Education Commissioner in New York, and they hired a law professor to do the first part, which was the literature review, which was largely inconclusive. And I can read you some quotes if you want. And then for the second part, they hired again this nonprofit, well-respected consultant firm to do analysis of public comments. But they received so little public comments that I think it's not obvious what we learned from that second part. And then I think the commissioner, based on this report, drafted some recommendations. It's not obvious to me where the recommendations came from, if they came from the consultants or the commissioner or somebody else.
Well, I sort of thought that the report looked like it had been written at a law school, because if you go into the details of the report, there tends to be sort of like a case for the plaintiffs kind of thing. They never say much good about an appointed school board. When you read the details, you sort of think they're going to say, get rid of this mayoral control, but they don't do that. But actually, if you read through the text, there's an awful lot of the mayoral control did this bad and that bad and the other bad. So it's sort of leading up to that. But then somebody must have stepped in and said, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting hypothesis. You know, I think that I got a slightly different read. In my read, it was a lot of like on the one hand and the other. And, you know, I guess it reminded me a little bit of a Trump rally where, you know, President Trump has the habit of saying, you know, some people say, and then just says outlandish things. And if, you know, I actually went into the file and did Control F. And if you just put in some claim and some argue, that comes up like a dozen times, which is a little bit odd, right? Because we don't want arguments, we want evaluation of the evidence. But it turns out like there's no evidence for any of these arguments. And in fact, you know, I'll read you just a couple of passages. Researchers report no consensus about whether any specific form of public governance leads to sustained improvements in student performance. And then another quote, the relationship between governance and educational outcomes is far from clear. And I think that's my read of the evidence as well. But if that's the state of the evidence, then to say whether mayoral control is good or bad, whether elected school boards are good or bad, whether how we would empower students and parents and community members, really, there's nothing, there's no policy implications. There's really no evaluation. There's no way to conclude, how things are doing. And I agree, you know, there's definitely an effort to kind of bend over backwards to raise doubts about mayoral control. And I think the part that really caught my attention is on the academic outcomes. And, there's a lot of data in there comparing New York to the rest of the state of New York, New York City to the rest of the state of New York. And it really shows pretty striking convergence that New York starts out at the beginning of mayoral control, really far behind academically. And over time, those gaps close. And then the report kind of bends over backwards and says, well, we don't know if it's because of mayoral control. It could be all these confounding variables. It could be other things going on, which I think is true. But I think that is true for like everything else in the report as well, where they don't bend over backwards to raise doubts, including about, community deliberation, about shared decision making, about, more division of power. We don't know if any of those things affect academics in a positive way either. And yet the report comes out and endorses those really on the basis of no evidence.
Well, the other thing about it is it doesn't seem to ever take a close look at an elected school board in a big city. You might say, well, we should go look out and see whether or not elected school boards really do a great job out there. And here's some examples of elected board. They could have gone to Miami. Yeah. Miami has over the years improved a lot under an elected school board. They had one superintendent through that whole period, but they could have done that, but they didn't do anything like that. And you can find some pretty dreadful examples of elected school boards as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the question is, what's the counterfactual? How do we know if elected school boards would be better on any of these dimensions? And in fact, I think in their literature review, they do highlight a lot of problems. And in fact, they cite some of my own work and they point out that, you know, in the average school board election, most voters are white and they don't have kids. And so if you're concerned about equity, which is one of the big themes of this report, not at all obvious why school boards elected by mostly white people without school-aged kids would bring about greater equity in education. So there's definitely, I think, a lot of reasons to doubt the theory of action that an elected school board would be better. It might be better in some places, might be worse in others, but I think we have no reason to think that on average, elected school boards really improve on any of the things we care about, whether it's just equity, efficiency, achievement, anything else, or even community participation. Because one of the things we know, and this is something they acknowledge, is a typical school board election that's held in off cycle, turnout's going to be somewhere around 10%. That's not community participation. That's not deliberation. And the people who do turn out are not at all representative of the broader community.
So, you know, one of the things that's missing in the report, and maybe I missed it, it might be in there after all, it's 300 pages long, is there any mention at all of the United Federation of Teachers or any mention to the collective bargaining process or to a union?
Good question.
Did I miss that?
I didn't see that either. And again, I probably didn't read it as carefully as I should have either. But I agree. You know, there's no discussion of collective bargaining. And to the extent that there is, really, there is a celebration of teacher expertise. Which is to me, you know, in some ways endorsing many of the demands that teachers unions make. Now, one thing that I found very interesting. So the second part of the report where they held public hearings to get community input. And they had some people showing up in person to testify, and they had some people submitting written comments. So if you look at the people who showed up in person to testify, 45% of those people were teachers. It's not surprising that a lot of what comes out of the analysis of the testimony is the opinion of teachers and the interest group and association that represents them. If anything, that the public comment piece of it was really channeling talking points exactly from the teachers union, which again, you know, nothing wrong with that, but that's not the only, you know, the only voice, that's not the only perspective, and that's not really the only interest that's involved in providing an education to students in New York.
So they said that they really want parents and students to be engaged. That's one of the things that's in their recommendations, but there were only 14% of the people who testified were parents, and only 4% were students. So
exactly.
They had chosen a tool for gathering information, which just didn't do what they said should be done.
Exactly. And I suspect many of those parents and students were recruited by teachers and other employees. So to what extent they are representative of the broader student and parent population, I certainly have grave doubts. So again, if our goal is to hear students and parents, the way to do that is not having a hearing that nobody attends. It's really to hire a public opinion firm and go out and do a survey of parents and students. And certainly for the $250,000 they spent on this analysis, they could have done many of those surveys and I think provided much more useful information.
Well, so Vlad, you're an expert on school governance and school elections and many other dimensions of the educational system. So what would you recommend to the city of New York? Should they keep what they have? How would you modify it?
Good question. So, you know, I think I would agree with, I think the big literature review finding, which is, you know, we don't really know. And if we're thinking about how to improve student outcomes, I don't know that governance is the lever I would really be focusing on and pulling on. And again, if our goal is to empower parents and students, then certainly many other governance arrangements as well, like charter schools and school choice, which the report I think is pretty critical about, which is kind of odd. But I don't know that I would be saying that the debate between elected school boards and elected and mayoral control is really the key here. And certainly, even if you go with an elected school board, there's a lot of variation. I mentioned one of those, it's election timing. So, you know, if my recommendations would really be A, like if you care about students and student outcomes, this is not where you should be focusing. You should be focusing on what's happening in the classroom. You should be focusing on teacher quality and evaluation. You should be focusing on curriculum. You should be focusing on student discipline and things like that, learning time. And all of those things are downstream of governance, but it's not obvious that governance has a huge impact on any of those outcomes. But to the extent that you care about governance, really, the dichotomy between elected school board and the mayoral control, that's the wrong dichotomy. There's huge variation within elected school boards when an election is held. Are there party labels on the ballot? How competitive are elections? How do you make them competitive? Who votes? I think all those matter much more, but there's nothing in this report to really think through some of these governance trade-offs and some of these governance questions.
Well, in New York City today, they have a mayor-appointed school board, but it isn't quite that. It's a 23-member board. It's a big board. It's a 23-member board. 13 members are appointed by the mayor. 10 members are not. So, you know, they talk about the need for more diversity and not just total mayor dominance. But in fact, that's there right now. They've got 10 members on that board who are either appointed by the borough presidents in New York City. There's five boroughs. Each borough has a president elected. I think he's elected separately from the mayor. I know he is, or she is. And then they have various community groups of one kind or another also picking some members of the board. So don't they already have what they're recommending?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the details of the New York model. And my sense is that, you know, they have some advisory committees. And certainly one of the messages in the report is they feel like these advisory committees are mostly for show and don't have any real say. And I don't know to what extent that's a fair characterization. But again, if our goal is diversity and diversity of interest represented, again, no evidence that school boards do better, right? I mentioned that the people who vote in school board elections are not very diverse. And so if you shift control from the mayor to the average voter, not obvious that the kinds of people they would pick would bring greater diversity. And so I think it's really hard to know whether the current system is better or worse on the diversity and breadth of community interests that are represented. So one other thing I'll mention that's, I think, related to this question of what's the counterfactual? One of the complaints in the report, one of the claims is that, you know, having a majority mayoral appointed board creates lack of continuity. They say, you know, you have these 4-year mayoral cycles, election cycles. And so, you can't plan. There's, you know, this kind of flavor of the month policy. But of course, we know that for the average urban superintendent in an elected school board district, their tenure is 3 years. So you don't get any more continuity in an urban district that has elected school boards. So I think, again, to your point, you know, knowing whether the current system is flawed, that might be a fair criticism, but that doesn't mean that an alternative model, whether, again, something else or elected school boards, would have any positive impact on those very same criteria that the community seems to be up in arms about.
Well, one of the scariest parts of the report for me was reading about the Chicago school board. Because in Chicago, they have had a mayor appointed board for, you know, many years. It goes back, it goes as far back as the 1940s, I believe, is when they set up a mayor appointed board in Chicago. But they're bringing it to an end and they're replacing it with a school board that's going to have, 20 some members on it. And each member is going to be elected from a particular ward. They're going to have people representing their wards on and trying to come, and there's going to be one person elected citywide. So I'm just wondering how in the heck that board is going to be any kind of a coherent governing system.
That's a great point. And, you know, I think there's a parallel here between education policy and housing policy. And we have had tremendous research over the last few years showing that when you have ward elections, in housing, you get NIMBYism. You get really kind of unrepresentative folks represented. And they drive policy in a way that makes housing unaffordable. And I worry that having, you know, ward elections in the school context leads to educational NIMBYism, right? In the same way. So I think it's definitely, I think definitely worth worrying about. But I guess, I would kind of double down on my earlier point. You know, I think arguing about like the governance system to me feels a little bit like rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic. Again, I think those were not really for me like the core questions. If what we care about is improving educational opportunity for students, I think those things might matter on the margin, on average, but certainly not like the top of my agenda for improving student outcomes.
Well, you mentioned this already, but one of the subtexts in the report, just in passing, it comes in and goes away and comes back again, is a mention of the charter schools. And there's always the compromises that have been made in the state legislature have been, well, if you do this with charter schools, then we'll extend mayoral control and so forth. So one of the things mayoral control did when Bloomberg came in and really established mayoral control in New York City was he created a lot of charter schools. And they are a bone of contention that's been around ever since. Is the solution in New York City is to expand the charter sector instead of worrying about governance?
It's a great question. I think New York City is one city where, you know, the quality of charter schools has been very good. And so if it's possible to scale those up while keeping the quality high, it certainly seems like that's an area worth considering. Now, I will say, I think a lot of the pushback to mayoral control is really a pushback to some of those Bloomberg era reforms. Because I think one of the things we've seen is charter schools, even high-performing charter schools, you know, the downside is enrollment losses in the public school system. And so certainly the other thing that Mayor Bloomberg did was he closed a lot of schools. And that, I think, pissed off a lot of people who lost their jobs who worked in those schools. But I think also a lot of community members who had a strong emotional attachment to those school buildings also felt very upset. And so when people complain about lack of community input, I do think some of that is really the legacy and the bitterness surrounding the school closure debate. And I think that is one area in school choice where we haven't figured it out, because, you know, when you have charter schools and they attract students, public school systems, because of all the frictions, because of all the interest groups, just cannot close buildings proportionally, right? Spending cannot decrease linearly with enrollment losses, and it creates very, very divisive politics. And I think that's certainly, you know, all of us who are advocates of charter schools and school choice really need to take seriously, right? That, you know, how to handle those enrollment losses in a way that where the community feels like they're respected, where their voices are heard, but ultimately where we put the interests of students first. And I don't think we've figured that out. And certainly I think New York, that's, you know, the debate about mayoral control is partly a legacy of that.
Well, actually, one of the things that every big city school system is going to have to face going forward is enrollment decline. We know that the fertility rate has declined. We have fewer babies being born today. That's been going on for the last 5 to 10 years. And that's now beginning to show up in elementary school. It's going to get worse as the kids progress through school. We just have fewer kids than we used to have. So this is going to be fewer kids. That means we got a lot of extra space, a lot of extra capacity that we haven't had before. And decisions have to be made about that. And those are very difficult political decisions to make.
I think that's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, closing a school, you know, is like the third rail of education politics, right? There's nothing that gets people more up in arms, partly because of the jobs involved and partly because, you know, like people have memories of their school. They have memories of the sports teams, the alumni care about the school. So there's a lot of people that, you know, for whom, you know, the closure is just really painful. And I think that politics is very, very difficult to navigate, because the benefits of closure, the efficiency gains, there's not necessarily, you know, as well of an organized interest group out there or a voice on the other side. And so that's what makes it very, very difficult to do. But as you said, we're going to have to do it somehow short of a kind of, you know, threat of bankruptcy. And so I'm curious to see how districts navigate that. And here, to your point, I think maybe governance will matter, right? Because to some extent, you know, how you govern the district affects which interests are represented and how much political pressure members face and how they trade off decisions about efficiency, about student outcomes versus some of these other considerations that are really core to the school closure debates.
So one of the things that actually has kept the legislature from doing anything about mayoral control in recent years, in my opinion, is that there is this memory of community control of the schools that occurred in New York City back during the Lindsay administration in the 1960s, early 1970s, and that whole experience led to nearly a bankruptcy in New York City. And the state had to come in and take over the schools and manage the finances and so forth. The history, if you go back to the 1960s and 70s, it's a pretty grim story in New York City. And so the talk of abandoning, and that's where mayoral control, that's why they went to mayoral control in the first place. Do they really want to go back to what they had?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, I can't speak for them, but I think it goes back to our conversation about wards and NIMBYism, right? I think one dimension of NIMBYism is the financial side, right? That you know, the costs of inefficiency are borne district-wide, while the costs of closure are borne very geographically. And so when you have geographic-based representation, in some ways you are stacking the deck and, you know, in favor of insolvency, because, you know, the geographic representation really prioritizes keeping schools open and it externalizes some of those costs to people living in other districts who are not your constituents. And certainly I'd be worrying about that in places that have geographically based representation. I think that's going to make closures more difficult and bring back many of the same concerns and crises that we faced, you know, in the era prior to mayoral control in New York.
So Vlad, here's a question I should have asked earlier, but why in the heck is the state legislature mucking around in New York City school board governance in the first place?
Yeah, you know much more about New York politics than I do. You know, again, my sense is a lot of this has to do with kind of labor power. And, you know, you have a democratically run state, and we know teachers unions are a big part of Democratic majority. And certainly, the Mayor Bloomberg did not have, I think, you know, was not loved by the educators and the teachers union in New York. And so I think, I think from the perspective of the teachers union, they're more likely to have like-minded folks in positions of power when you have elected school board. And, you know, their way of doing that is calling their friends in Albany and getting them to help out. That's my sense. I don't know. Does that strike you as plausible or accurate?
Yeah, maybe they're stuck on Bloomberg, but, you know, they now have Mayor Adams. They don't have, they had Mayor de Blasio. So they've had plenty of, you know, Democratic mayors since. So why are they, you know, fixating on the past here?
Yeah, that's a good question. Do you know the answer?
I don't know the answer. Maybe it's to keep pressure. You know, I think a lot of things are at work. I think Republicans like to have hassle New York City. They like to blame New York City. It's good for collecting votes upstate. So I think the Republicans in the state legislature are always willing to consider governance changes in New York. But on the other hand, there's always some Democrats who want to make hay too for one reason or another. So it's a complex story. I don't think there's a simple answer to why the state feels a need to interfere with New York politics.
That makes sense.
So Vlad, what's your final conclusion? Is this just a flash in the pan story that's going to go away, or is this going to be a big deal in New York?
Yeah, I don't know. I think your guess is as good as mine. I guess my concern is that, you know, this report really feels like it's really about providing political cover and providing talking points and justifications for folks that want to do things for other reasons. And I think for the reasons that we discussed, really, that would be a mistake. There's really nothing actionable in this report. There's really no compelling evidence one way or the other. And I think it would be a huge mistake to make major policy and governance changes based on what's here, because it's not much.
Well, they did what all commissions do. I mean, all reports tend to recommend that another report be undertaken. One of their recommendations is that a new commission be formed to consider what should be done.
I saw that. Yeah, that's great.
So thank you very much for joining me, Vlad, and discussing this rolling topic.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I've been speaking with Vlad Cogan, professor of political science at Ohio State University. We've been discussing a just released report by the New York State Department of Education entitled Mayoral Control of New York City Schools. I am Paul Peterson. This is the Education Exchange. Please join me for a new podcast released on the Education Next website every Monday at noon Eastern Time.